friends. We still continue to receive many letters from mothers about their children. One mother wrote and told us about all of the family ills and told the children to pray. The mother was not well. The father was out of a job. The grandmother had broken her hip. And the little sister had the measles. And this little boy ended his prayers by saying, "And dear God, please take care of yourself, because if anything happens to you, we'll all be in the soup." Another mother said that as she was coming home from Europe this summer, she was trying to smuggle in a bottle of perfume. And her little daughter knew it. And the custom official was opening the bag and going through it, and the little girl said, "Mommy, he's getting warm, isn't he?" And another mother said she gave a party for a group of seven-year-olds. Among them was her own seven-year-old son. She overheard him say to a little girl, age seven, "You know, it's stuffy in here. Let's go outside. There's a beautiful moon outside." The mother was worried until there came the sentence, "You know, you can catch such wonderful toads under a full moon." Confucius, the wise old Chinese sage, once was asked what was most necessary to reform the world. And he said to give an exact definition of things. Now, how right he was is evident in the way, for example, the Soviets use peace, when they mean being subject, of course, to the Soviets. Freedom, they have a different meaning to freedom. They mean by that subjection to a Soviet dictator. And there's also another word that is used in modern language which does not really express the fact, and that is an inferiority complex. An inferiority complex, if it were properly called, should be named pride. Pride is just an inordinate love of self. And sometimes self is thwarted. And the psychologists say, you develop an inferiority complex. Well, here are some examples of how they say it is developed. There was a man had a Volkswagen. He was very proud of his little German car. The motor was in the back. All the power was in the back. And he didn't mind so much big, long cars with fins about 8 feet long passing him by. One day he was listening in on the radio, and he heard over the radio, "It's what's up in front that counts." You know, he developed such an inferiority complex that he sold his Volkswagen, and now he rides in a little donkey that's pulled by a jackass. It's what's up in front that counts. Then there was a professor. And this professor taught philosophy. He knew his Aristotle and his Plato thoroughly. He prided himself that he was a thinking man. One day while he was smoking a cigarette, he looked down and he discovered that he was not using a thinking man's filter. He developed a terrific inferiority complex. He gave up teaching and thinking, went in for dangerous work. He began throwing great steel cables across rivers. He forgot there was such a thing as thought. In order to get away from it, he had tattoos put on both of his hands. And then there was a young man who was in college. The English professor said, "Always, always be original. Be creative. Be dynamic. Never repetitious. The only way you'll ever get ahead in the world, young man, is by having original thoughts." And then he came out and tuned in the radio. Every time he tuned in, all he heard coming out from the radio, time after time, was H2O tastes good, like water should. He developed such an inferiority complex, he lost his mind. He's in an insane asylum now, and all he says is, H2O tastes good, like water should. I suppose I should have developed an inferiority complex once. I was... conversation, you remember, the famous and great singer of the Metropolitan Opera, Grace Moore. While in conversation with her, she said after the first 10 minutes, "I have not heard a single word you said." I was just listening to your voice. You have a wonderful voice. Well, I said, Grace, if I have a good voice, why can't I sing? She said, have you ever tried? Which one of us hasn't, huh? I used to know a priest in Cleveland once who could carry only one tune, and that was, They Kept the Pig in the Parlor. If you were close enough to him at the altar, you'd hear something like this. Per omnia secula, seculorum. Well, so she said, have you ever sung? And I said, well, yes, certainly. She said, well, from a musical point of view, what is your favorite opera? I said, Faust. She said, your favorite duet. I said, Anse pure, Anse radieuse. She said, all right, let's sing it together. Well, if you remember that particular duet, in round numbers, it goes up 18 and 7/8 octaves per verse. So Grace and I began singing Anse pure, Anse radieuse, and her voice was ringing out over the Connecticut countryside. We went through the first verse, got into the middle of the second, and she stopped abruptly, turned to me, and she said, you're right. You can't sing. And I can't draw either. So I should indeed have an inferiority complex. But really what it is pride. You see, the assumption is that whenever your ego is thwarted, whenever your drive toward false superiority is negated, you develop an inferiority complex. Now, that's not true. There are many people who are thwarted who do not develop an inferiority complex. Here, for example, was a young man who was a boy who was ugly. He had a tremendous nose. You could hardly see Jimmy Durante's compared to his. In addition to that, his father had a limp, and everybody in the neighborhood made fun of his father. And he was very poor, always dressed in rags. Well, with that background and that environment, everybody making fun of the way he looked, he should have grown up with an inferiority complex. Should never have done very much for humanity. As a matter of fact, that man has done more, and did more, for the orphans and the poor and the destitute of the world than anyone who has ever lived. That was St. Vincent de Paul. And then there was another boy who grew up in a terrible environment. His father was always borrowing, never paying back. Neighbors used to run from him whenever the father came. When the time came for him to be born, the mother didn't want him. And the mother went out to a shed to have her child, not in the house. Father didn't want him. The mother didn't want him. He hardly wanted himself. Wherever he went, the boy was not wanted. He should have developed an inferiority complex according to all the laws of psychology. But he did not. He went through life the happiest man who ever lived. He was St. Joseph Cupertino. Then there was another one who was dumb. Was he dumb? Every year the school authorities used to meet to decide whether or not they would let him pass. And they finally let him pass because he seemed genial enough. And then finally, when he did finish school, he was sent out to a district that was so poor, so desolate, that they felt he couldn't do any harm out there. Within 10 years, people were coming to him from all over the world for his counsel and his advice. How did this man know, having never learned? He was the Curé of Ars. Then there was another boy. His father was always after him because of what he did with his money. His father didn't always know what he was doing with it, but he couldn't keep it. His father had a cotton business, wanted him to work in the business. The boy wasn't interested in the cotton business. Just went from bad to worse. Finally, the boy was summoned before the authorities. He gave back to his father everything. He said, from now on, I call no one father but God. Threw a sack of gold on top of his clothes and went out and walked the frozen ground between the frosty trees He felt silly, almost as silly as a fly on a window pane. But he did not mind. He would go on being the court jester of the King of Paradise. That was St. Francis of Assisi. Now, why is it that some grow up with this sense of false superiority and others do not? Well, the answer is this. Actually, what happens to one psychologically depends to a great extent upon whether or not one believes in God. If, for example, one believes in God, one practices what is known as the virtue of humility. Humility is the recognition of the truth of ourselves. If, however, one believes that he is his own God, then there comes pride, superiority complex, egotism, and selfishness. If one believes in God, then first of all one recognizes, well, I came from nothing. Really, the closer I get back to nothingness, the nearer I get to creation itself. Then in addition to that, if one has any gifts, talent for singing, speaking, mind, heart, makes no difference which. The humble man will say, well, what have I that I have not received? And if I have received, why do I glory as if I had not? Then he will be humble too because he knows his own sins. He cannot know the inside of anyone else. Therefore, he will refrain from judging them. So there's always, always a great resource of power in the humble man. And he's never set back by any of these reproofs. But the man who believes himself a tin god, oh, indeed, with him it's very different. He's absolutely defenseless against the trials and the buffetings of life. Anyone else challenges his deity? There's a cause for war. So there's a contempt for superiors. There's a hatred of evil, of equals. And there is a disdain of those that are inferior. Sometimes you meet moments of both in the same person. I heard of a young clergyman once who was going up to preach a sermon, a very important occasion, and he strutted out through the sanctuary and up into the pulpit as if he was Lord and Master of the universe. When he got up there, he couldn't think of the first line. And he came down like a whipped dog with his tail between his legs. And the bishop that was on the throne said, if he went up like he came down, he would have come down like he went up. Changing this into an analogy. You see, if we have the sun that is above us. Now, I should develop an inferiority complex. Here's a man. You know, I can't draw. That's a woman. When the sun is above us, we cast no shadow. Now, suppose you put the sun behind you. Then what happens? Then your shadow. And you say, oh, look what big arms I have. How tall I am. How big I am. How magnificent. Why? Because the light. Because the truth. Because God is kept behind your back. You put the sun in front of you. There's no shadow. There's no falsity. You never see it. Little bird one day came to a lily and said to the lily, what are you doing this foul pond? Staying here all the time? You never go anywhere? This is a crazy life. The lily said, well, after all, I can prove to the world, can I not, that one can live purely even in a bad environment? And the bird suggests, but you haven't lived. Be modern. Come with me to another world. And so the little lily agreed, and the little bird nipped away at the stem and carried the lily away. It was wonderful for a day or two, and then the lily began to fade, and there's nothing that smells worse than a dead lily. And so, superiority does not really mean that we are not to strive for perfection, but according to the powers and talents that we have. And the lily was striving for something that was contrary to its nature. The greatest example and the best reason in the world for not having this undue sense of superiority is the example of the good Lord on the night of the Last Supper, when he washed the feet of his apostles. Imagine. Here were these 12 crude men around him. And there were 7 things mentioned about what he did that night. He rose from the table. He took off his outer garment. 3, he took up a towel. 4, he girded himself with a towel. 5, he poured water in the basin. 6, he washed their feet. And 7, he wiped their feet. Though necessarily no symbolism need be attached to these words, nevertheless, they do recount the whole story of his life. Because the one who was washing the feet of the apostles was not a man. It was a God who became a man. And he got up from a banquet once, as it were, the heavenly banquet, to go on a mission to this earth. He took off his outer garment, not his divinity, but the glory of his divinity. He took up a towel, the towel of our humanity. For the towel in those days was the mark of a slave. He emptied himself and took upon himself the form and the servant. The form of a servant and a slave. And he girded himself with a towel, surrounded himself with humanity, poured out his blood, wash away sins. And then wiped, sanctified those whom he had cleansed by his redemption. And as he washed the feet of the apostles, or as he prepared to do it, Peter said, "Wouldst thou wash my feet?" And their Lord said, "If I wash them not, thou shalt have no companionship with me." Peter said then, "Lord, wash my hands, my feet, and my head." He would not lose that intimacy. So this is not just then the picture of a fellow man with a fellow man. Perhaps we could give this example to make it clear what was really happening. Suppose that you pitied dogs, particularly dogs in other parts of the world that are unfed and homeless, and you had the power of aiding them by dispossessing yourself of your body. Suppose you took your soul and put your soul into the animal organism. This great mind of yours that could know the arts and the sciences and could speak is now enfleshed in a dog. What a humiliation that would be if you limited yourself to that organism and did not speak because the dog's tongue could not speak. Then there would be another humiliation. Because you went into that animal organism, you would have to be surrounded by dogs, knowing all the time that you were 1,000, 1,000,000 times better than the dogs. Yet you lived their life, shared their outcast existences, and starved with their hunger. You think that the humiliation? Well, what is it? For a God to come down to this earth and enflesh himself in a human organism, limiting himself for the most part to that organism, hungering and thirsting and suffering, feeling the outcasts and the outrageous slings and arrows of a fortune that would oppose them at every step. And then in addition to that, to be surrounded by men, just human beings, dull and slow to understand, weak, with their petty little reasonings and queries, testing a divine intelligence. That was the emptying indeed. And so now is he washed the feet of these men, girded with this towel, God in the form of a man. He said to them, "You call me Lord and Master. And indeed I am." That's what they did call him. "Lord, is it I? Lord, bid me come unto thee." Never once did they ever call our Lord Jesus during his earthly life. Never once. That name became great only after he was glorified. He said to them, "You call me Lord and Master, and indeed I am. And if then I wash your feet, follow my example. Wash the feet of one another." In other words, never be proud. Never have a superiority complex. He was the greatest among you. Let him be as the least. But I think that the greatest humiliation of all was when he, the God-man, knelt and washed the feet of Judas.
Mr. Keene will return in just a moment.
The story of someone who went to Bermuda and attended a horse race for the first time in her life. And she said that everything she bet she was going to give to the poor of the world and send it to us. Well, there are not many fine horses there, but she bet, parlayed every bet. She won every one until the seventh race. And she put all the money she had on the seventh race. They said, "Don't bet on that horse. It's 7 years old. It's never won a race in its life." But she put it all on that horse. And she sent us the $366 for the poor of the world that she won. And do you know the name of the horse? Fulton's Future. Bye now, and God love you.